The area that we're standing in is called, all the avenues are called after birds. This is, we're standing in the Avenue of the Linnets. Near us is the Avenue of the Eagle, the Blackbird, the Canary. And close by is the Avenue of the Song of the Birds, which in French is a beautiful name, the Avenue Chantoiseau. And I think from that, you can, from the sounds around us, you can tell easily why we're all, they're all the avenues are called after birds.
Terry Stewart, the tenant of 3 Avenue of the Linnets in Brussels. It's a big house with basement standing in its own grounds. And with Terry live his wife Anne and their 3 children, David, when he's not attending UCG, and Niall and Brian. When they moved here, they took it in their stride as just another move, just another bit of packing to do. Anne says,
well, we started off in Belfast and then we moved down to Cork, 4 or 5 years there, and then up to Galway, 7 years there, and we've been for the last 3 years here in Brussels. So, you know, it gets easier every time, the move and settling in and adjusting. Because the first of everything, of course, is the hardest. So after that, it can get easier. It does get easier. It has to get easier. You couldn't go on.
But this is a very big change for you in the sense that it's another language too.
Oh, yes. That's a problem for me because I'm having problems with the French. I have tried, but I don't know what it is. I just can't seem to I think it's the verbs are the problem, just remembering from the different verbs for different things. But apart from, there are enough people who can speak English and are only delighted to practice their English on me. And I think that perhaps is a problem because I'm delighted to let them practice on me and instead of me practicing my French.
But you have your own team of interpreters here, so you're not doing too badly.
Oh, yes, the children. I don't know what I would do without them because they do all my phone calling for me because the phone is a problem. Somebody said to me, if you can have a phone conversation in French, you've it made. Well, I haven't got to that stage yet, so the children have to do all that that for me. I can manage to make an appointment for my hair and very, very simple. I write it out and sort of just repeating it and repeating it. Until somebody at the other end of the line says, ah, oui. You know, they realise what I'm trying to say to them. And then, of course, my accent doesn't help either. It's my French accent is very bad.
Terry, did you have any problems adjusting to the language?
I had some, Frida, because I hadn't done any French really since I left school, which was a long, long time ago. I have travelled a bit in, I'd been to Brussels quite often since about 1969, but apart from taxi fares and giving directions, that's the only French I spoke. It's a little bit difficult because where we are, there are 5 what they call Anglophones in the directorate that I work in, a lot of Francophones. Francophone was once described to me as a telephone box that took francs, but it's not quite true. These are people whose mother tongue is French, and we have quite a lot of them. Therefore, most of our meetings, quite a lot of our work, is in French. We can work in English, and I can work in English. I was dealing largely with UK and with Irish matters for the first couple of years, so it wasn't a big problem. But as you begin to get more integrated into the work of the community, French is very, very necessary. And so I've progressed quite a bit, I think. It's hard. I'm doing a course of intensive French, intensive course at the moment. It's 4 hours every morning, a couple of hours in the evening for 2 weeks, and I'm hoping next winter to devote quite a lot of work to it. I had the same sort of problems learning Irish when I was in Gaeltachta, mainly because I didn't have the time. Here I have a little bit more time, but there are pressures, family pressures, and you just cannot really, when you've had a long day, sit down and think of 2 or 3 hours of French. So it's a hard thing. You have to keep pressing yourself to do it. And I think I'm now adjusted psychologically to doing it. And I'm going to have a real go at it next winter. And then after that, please God, maybe learn another community language.
Well, you certainly haven't turned your back on the Irish language because Niall is off tomorrow to the Gaeltacht.
That's
to
right.
To Rossaville,
that's
is it?
Right, to Rossaville. The children, both Niall and Brian, learn Irish at school, in the European school. They do Irish. And Niall is going back and has been, this will be his fifth year, I think, at Rosseville. Brian was in Ballymacara last year, Ballyvourney. He's going back to Galway with us this year. He won't be going to an Irish college this year, but please God, he'll start again next year, going back to Ireland to a summer school.
Why do you do this?
Well, in both cases, it's personal choice for the boys. Niall came with Irish, and it was always his idea he would do his leaving certificate back in Ireland, and he's going to do that, so in a sense Irish was necessary for him. Brian, not so much. We had a chat about it last year, and he took the decision he wanted to do Irish, and we had a further chat about it about 3 weeks ago, and he's taken the decision he wants to continue on doing Irish. So I'm delighted.
But I think they need it for themselves, they need it for themselves, because while we're all Europeans and that, we still have our roots, that we have to keep those. Though I don't speak Irish myself, so I shouldn't really be talking about roots and all that sort of thing. But I think it's necessary for them to go back to Ireland for a month every year and really get back to basics again. And it helps them. It helps them, I think.
I think that's very, yes, very true.
They can get very... At that age, they can forget easily, you know, when they get too cosmopolitan. I mean, the European school, they've got, what, 4 or 5 nationalities altogether. And you can get too European. So I suppose it's the wrong thing to say, because we're all supposed to be Europeans. But you do need your own little corner of it to keep.
No, I must say I agree with Anne, because my personal view is that to be a good European, I think you have to have a strong feeling for your own country too. If you're going to build Europe, it's not a unified Europe in the sense that it's a mishmash of cultures. I think it's got to be a strong community of diversity and culture, and that's what we must aim at. And I think I'm fully agreement there. I think we've got to maintain our roots, and we'd like to see the children maintaining their roots very much back in Ireland.
Is schooling good here in general?
Difficult question to answer, because it depends very much on the child. It depends very much on the age he comes into the school. The European school is provided for the children of not only of people working in the commission, but if they have places, any other people who have children who wish to go there. It's strong language bias. Each of them do 5 languages. Brian hasn't started his 5th language yet, but Niall does 5 languages. He does English, Irish, Dutch, French and Latin. Brian, who's now 12, has French, Dutch, Irish, English, and he starts Latin next year. Now, it's a fairly hefty load on them. And to come in, they also, I should tell you, must do history and geography through another language other than their mother tongue. So in both cases, well, Niall, again, has been doing history and geography through French for the last 3 years. Brian will begin, I think, next year to do history and geography through French.
What about David?
Oh, David. I tend to forget David. He's working. David's at university in Galway, and he finished school at 17 in Ireland with his leaving cert. And funny enough, it was always our ambition, because I taught a part-time in the university in Galway, and I always felt that our kids come to university too early. And so we had said, when David finishes, we'll send him to Europe for a year. But we didn't realise at the time we'd be coming to Europe for a year. So the year he finished, we came to Europe. And he came with us, and he spent a year at a school studying French. He got a reasonably good mark on his leaving in French, but he spent a full year here doing nothing but French. And his French is very good. He did all his driving lessons in French. He did his driving test in French. In fact, he has difficulty in calling brakes. He has to think what they are when he's driving.
Well, I think that was the rock I perished on, because, you know, David went out. I never posted a letter. I didn't even buy a stamp for 1 year, because David was there and he could go up and get stamps and he could do all the things like that. That was the rock. If I didn't have that, I would have had to do it myself, and I could have probably been much better on with the French now. So, but I think it was a great thing for him, because he matured and became a more rounded person, and is quite happy back in Galway. Very happy back there.
I'd certainly say to anyone who has the means of doing it, that they should try and see their children get some little experience of life on the continent, because it's very much part of our life in Ireland now. Europe is meaning more and more. We're building more contacts, and I think the more we get our kids to understand what Europe is all about, I think it'll be better for the country in the future.
What does it do for them living here, for example? Does it make them better people in any way?
Again, I think it depends a lot on the children. It doesn't, and the family background and whatnot. But I think that it does round them off much more. They see a much wider spectrum of life. They're meeting people of all shades of opinion, background, colour and creed.
Are they meeting very privileged people, though?
I think perhaps they are, you know, that we're all of the same sort of level, mostly community children, they're common market children they're meeting. Admittedly, they're all of all nationalities. But it certainly, I think, it helps them to mature and be. The only danger is they can become too sophisticated. You know, because really...
That's an Irish mother speaking.
Well, it may be an Irish mother speaking, but they have been called, the European children at the European school have been called the pampered darlings of Europe. And I think it's true. And that's my one trouble, that I have three pampered darlings. But I try when they come from the school to leave the pampered darling back at the school and keep them in.
Terry, did you come out here after the big money? Or for job fulfilment, or why really?
That's a difficult one. It's peculiarly enough, it's one thing I never saw myself doing was emigrating from Ireland. All through my working life, I've never ever contemplated it. I became involved with the community way back in the 50s. I took a great interest in the European Common Market, as it then was, one of the communities. And I used to lecture on it and in Northern Ireland quite a bit. Then in Gaeltachta, I began to get involved with the community, establishing relationships from about 1970 onwards. And I became responsible, as one of the functions I was responsible for, was relations with the European community. So it happened that in 1976... I was invited to come out and spend 2 or 3 years here in a temporary capacity. And it has also happened in that time that I have been offered a permanent job, and I'm now permanent. Why I did it, I liked the idea of working in an international organization. It was something I hadn't thought about much before, but when it was put to me, I thought it would be a tremendous thing. Certainly the money was attractive.
Most attractive.
I made my decision at a time when taxation was pretty rough in Ireland. And it was certainly a factor. And also I felt it was a new phase in my career.
Do you need to consider money very much when you leave a job in Ireland to come to work here? You obviously need a hell of a lot more money.
Oh, I think you must do. I think you have a lot of extra costs. You're living in a high-wage society, a high-cost society in many ways. Some costs not so different, others quite different. Anything with service, anything with labour involved is extremely expensive. I'm thinking of personal services, hairdressing, things like that.
A haircut, for example, for yourself and the lads.
Oh, well, I mean, if we all went together, we fortunately don't go all together, it's about £30 to £35 for the four of us. So that's the sort of thing. But then you take into account the fact that wages are so much higher here, and if you even say that they're double what the Irish level is, and I think they're a little bit, maybe more than that, you're talking then maybe £4 a head, and that's not unreasonable compared to what you pay in Dublin, which is what I paid recently in Dublin. And I felt the standard of service that we get here is better.
You do pay taxes, of course.
Oh, we pay taxes, yes.
Here?
Not to the Belgian state. We pay it to, because I'm in the commission, we pay what is called a community tax. And that is, that I think, not too sure what happens to it, but it goes into the general funds. Anyway, I think Irish civil servants, their money is credited to the Irish government.
And how do the taxes compare with at home?
Better. It's a bit better, yeah. And difficult to say, quite honestly, but percentage-wise, I would be paying a lower rate of tax here than at home, largely because I think in part from salary we get allowances because we're living abroad. I think you must sort of think in terms of going abroad. I would say you must think in terms of earning up to three times your net hourly salary at least to come out.
Would you ever aspire to owning your own home here?
We've thought about it. We're thinking about it now. We've kept our house in Galway, and we're always with the idea that we may go back. We are thinking about it here. The question is whether it's more economic to rent or to buy here, because rents are controlled by the state and house prices are quite high. You'll pay £120,000-£150,000 for a house without too much difficulty.
But then it's your own. I think it goes against the grain of an Irish person to pay rent and have nothing to show for it at the end.
Are rents very high here?
They are. But then again, you get what you pay for. I mean, this house is quite expensive, but we have a very nice big house. It's about twice the size of our house in Galway, and it's very nice. I like this house. I'd like to buy this house, but this house now to buy would be about £200,000. Well, there's no way we could pay that money. Mm. Or we would pay. Mm. It's not just a could, but it would.
Yeah.
It's very expensive.
I think it's the standard of housing is high, and there is the renting of accommodation is much more prevalent here. It was said recently that Irish people own their houses and rent their televisions. Here you own your television and you rent your house. And that's exactly, absolutely true.
How about, you know, getting out of here? You're obviously at a great vantage point living here.
Oh, yes. I mean, you get into the car at the door and 2 hours later, or 3 hours later, you're in Paris. 2 hours later, you're over the German border, well into Germany.
Yeah.
You're without the hassle of moving across sea.
Yeah.
It's
good.
Really, you get spoiled here.
You must remember, Belgium is only the size of Munster.
Yes.
And there's 10 million people in it. But you can shop in Germany quite easily in a day. You can go to France for a day shopping. You can go to Holland without any problem. And travelling on holidays is absolutely no problem. You can get on the motorway about 2 kilometres from here and you can virtually motorway the whole way to Rome.
Yeah. But the thing is, you've got to go about 90 miles to go to the seaside and into another country.
Well, there's no shortage of seaside where David Stewart, who is 19, spends most of his year. He studies science at University College Galway and travels to Brussels on holiday.
During the summer, though, it's not much of a holiday during the summer because I'm working now. I'll be working right up until the middle of August.
What kind of work are you doing?
Well, at the moment I'm working in a newspaper distributors. I'm working on the night shift from 8 in the evening till 4 in the morning. Of course, I'm being paid pretty well for it. But
how much?
Well, my basic is £500 a month, plus bonuses. And it came, everything before tax and social security came to about £650. Of course, I lost £150 of that to the tax and social security. But it's still, £500 is still a sizable amount, so it is.
And that's just not a nixer, in fact. You're actually replacing a full-time worker.
Yes, that's very, very true. The way it is here is that the employers know that their workers have been working all year and they deserve a holiday, so they let them go off. But because of the nature of the business that I'm working in, they cannot close down. They have to keep the newspapers going, so they have to bring in students. And for that, they have special student contracts and everything, and special student arrangements and everything. In fact, one thing which struck me this year was that the employers paid my membership for the union, for the trade union, as an associate membership for the trade union for the 2 months that I'm here.
And talking about school, Niall and Brian told us.
Well, the people in the class are Irish, English, Welsh, Scottish, a mixture, really, from all over Great Britain.
And what's the common language?
English. But during break we speak French and English.
Because if an English person wants to talk to an Italian, the language will be in French. Now, if an English person wants to talk to a German, it'll be English, because the Germans speak fluent English, like the Dutch. And if you want to talk to a Frenchman, you speak French, because they speak French. That's where it stops. That's what I find out, that the French are at a big disadvantage coming to Brussels, because they already have the French, while for the rest of us, it's a completely new language. So we gain more, in a sense, than the French themselves and the Belgians, even though they'd have their two languages. But I find I think it's really not fair on the French, in a sense.
How do you manage now about going out at night and that sort of thing? Would you feel as free to walk out at night here as you would in Rosseville or in Cork or in Dublin or any place else you've ever lived?
Well, you could compare Rosseville to here, because, well, there's nobody about after 10:30 at night. They're all up in Terry's, so they are. But in Dublin or Cork, I wouldn't feel very safe after about 10 o'clock. I mean, I usually am on the last bus from the centre out to Bray, where I stay. And I don't particularly like being downtown when it's dark, because you never know what's around the next bend. Well, over here, you can be pretty sure that you will be safe on the streets, because the police have a fair hand in everything. Some people say it's a police state. Well, people say that they haven't lived here, because life is so different here. It's, you know yourself that you will be safe on the streets, even though you hear all these great stories about police brutality. But I find there's no problem. You know, the police, you don't actually see them around, but if anything happens, the smallest incident, the place is just swarming with them. I think it's fine, because I feel safe, all my friends feel safe, and there's no problem about anything.
Brian, do you miss your friends at home at all, the ones that you've made in various places?
Yeah, a wee bit, because they speak English and I can just go around and say, are you coming up for a game of football? That kind of thing, coming up to play a game.
Here you have to think how you're going to say it.
Yeah, but I don't really have much friends around this area.
Can you play a game of football here?
Well, if friends come over from other parts, from the class.
But you've got to organise it, have you, in advance, more or less?
Yeah, you have to kind of ring up a day before and say, around, okay, 11 o'clock, and then they probably head off at around 4, and then you're left.
How does a body make contact with girls here?
Ah. Well, the life, anyway, in my class and in most of the classes in the European school, you've got two choices. One, you either make them at the school, because that's school, or else you have the parish here. And the parish here is completely different to anything you could imagine in Ireland, because they have fantastic facilities for the teenagers themselves. And there are a lot of parents who've put in a lot of work into getting a community spirit within the teenagers themselves. And you just really can't explain, because the teenagers here are just one massive, big, happy family, in a sense, because they do an awful lot of things together. We had a teenage workshop which went on for 7 months, and when that was finished, everybody knew everybody extremely well. As at the start, nobody knew anybody, really, even though we'd all been at the same church, same classes for 3 years. And after that was finished, we all ended up invading on someone's house after Mass on a Sunday for something to do, because for 7 months we were completely dependent on the workshop and we just didn't know what to do after it.
So would you be inclined to take out a French girl, an Irish girl, an English girl? One more than another?
Well, I don't see any difference. I mean, my French, in my opinion, isn't bad. I don't know what my French teacher thinks about that. But, I mean, if I want to talk to a girl in French, there's no problem, really. But the English-speaking people of my own age seem to go out more with their own language. Because although you might speak the French, you can get into situations and things like that, which is just easier to have someone who speaks your own language around. So it's just as handy, in a sense.
So is it good here? Is it a good life for you?
Oh, yeah, I love it here, so I do.
Really?
I really do, yeah.
Brian?
I prefer here than Ireland, really.
Why?
Well, it's more fun. Got better places to go when you go to them. Oh, you got a wider range of cinemas, better films. You go more often.
Well, we didn't have time to go to the cinema in Brussels, but we did go shopping with the Stuarts and were amazed to discover that food prices were very little dearer than at home. How do the Stuarts find prices? After all, they live there.
I think it's difficult to say because it'll vary from family to family in terms of what their own desires and preferences are. I've said earlier, services are expensive. Anything with personal service in. We find there are certain foodstuffs more expensive here. We find fruit and vegetables, I think, Anne should be talking about this more, but we both discussed it a lot. Fruit and vegetables probably cheaper and much better quality in general. I'm not saying you don't get good quality in Ireland, but you can, but in general you get good quality here. Things like durable consumer goods, electrical goods, things like that, much of a muchness. Eating out can be the big difference we find from Ireland is there's a tremendous number of middle grade restaurants where you can eat out at quite reasonable prices. And I think the reason for this, I've thought about it at length because of my long association with the tourist industry in Ireland, back in my old days in Cork and Kerry. The clue, I think, is the fact that you have a very large population and they tend to eat out a lot. You know, it's you can go out there, go out and spec to a restaurant some night, as we did recently, and we went to about four restaurants, couldn't get in on a Tuesday night or a Wednesday night. Quite amazing. And admittedly, okay, they weren't big restaurants, but just couldn't get a table. So there's a lot more eating out, a lot bigger volume of population, and I think that tends to level prices out a bit. But some of my friends in the tourist business now might have different ideas about that, but certainly that's my view on it.
I think maybe it's the cookers are so terrible here in Brussels that wives refuse to cook on them, that they insist on going out to eat, because they've a different type of cooker.
Is it gas or electricity?
Well, I have an electric stove, but you can have both, but it fluctuates terribly. You know, for instance, here between 5:30 and 7:30, the voltage drops, and the cookers are generally smaller, and they're so different.
But didn't your electrician tell you?
Oh, yes. My cooker went on me, and an electrician who spoke English came along, and he said, well, if you want to cook in the English way, get an English cooker. And I said, well, what does the Belgian housewife do when she wants to bake a cake or something like that? And he said, bake a cake with patisseries all over? I mean, you know, he was amazed that anybody would want to make their own cakes. And
I think this is the Northern Ireland upbringing, you see.
Yeah, well,
what we save a few pence.
I know, but I mean, the cakes are so beautiful here, of course. I don't blame anybody going out and buying.
What do you notice about eating out in particular now, particularly when you go home? What kind of contrasts do you notice?
I think that, first of all, it's very expensive to eat out at home now, and there's a much better variety of restaurants, and you can go, well, I suppose you can do that in Ireland also, you can go to a cheap one or an expensive one, but as Terry said, there's a marvellous in-between,
in the middle, yeah.
That we can all go, that the family can go without upsetting the budget too much, you know.
Ah, but there is one thing they miss.
The meat has a beautiful flavour for a start in Ireland. And here it's very nice, and you don't get fat or bone or anything like that. But at the beginning, I thought this was marvellous. You just paid for meat. You weren't having a big bone or a big piece of fat in the middle. But after a while, you notice that the bone gives the flavour and the fat gives the flavour, and that's all taken away. And they put it in a little string bag with a bit of fat on the top, but that's not the same. It's not the same. But I must say now, the fish, I haven't really bought fish here. because we're so far from the sea that I don't believe it's fresh. And people say, oh, but it is, it's brought down.
I'm one of the people
crack
who say
of dawn, it is. And, but I just don't believe, because the sea's not at my doorstep the way it was in Galway. I don't believe the fish is fresh.
Brussels has the name for being an expensive place to buy clothes, and some of the big Parisian designers have opened shops there in order to woo the custom of the Eurocrats' wives. What does Anne Stewart feel about clothes prices?
Well, I think the clothes are very expensive here. The good clothes are very expensive. Now, of course, you can get whatever you want to pay, but you will get what you pay for. If you buy a dress, say, at 1,000 francs, which is around the £15, you'll get a £15 dress, which is very cheap here. You know, it'll be cheap material and everything else. You can also get a very nice dress for, say, £40, but you could get a magnificent dress for 100 or 150 that you won't see on other people. You will have it for years and it will look well. And they're just different. You know, I know you can get, if you go up Grafton Street, you can buy dresses for £150 and that. But £150, I wouldn't dream of paying that for a dress in Ireland. I wouldn't dream of paying it. But here, while I haven't paid it here, at least I consider it. And look at it and consider that perhaps it would be nice. Again, it would be for a special occasion. But here, I find now that the women just buy, if they see a dress at £150, and it doesn't have to be for a wedding or a dance or a special party or anything like that, they like it, it fits them, they buy it.
One gets the impression that there's very little struggle involved living in Brussels. There's a most efficient, cheap and clean transport system, for example, by tram and underground. And one-way flyover road systems in this city of 1 million people make for free-flowing traffic. Even the dustbin collection service is impressive with its recycling policy.
Well, we were very struck by this. First of all, when we came here first, we had a daily collection of daily dustbin, or garbage, as the Americans would say. Shortly after we came here, we got a letter from the town hall saying that they were organising once a week the collection of bottles for recycling and paper. And I must say, it's tremendous. I always would resist buying non-returnable bottles because I thought it was a dreadful waste. But here, all the bottles are taken away one day a week. We have a special collection for bottles and newspapers. And we get the odd little note now and then to say that because of our great work in handing back newspapers, we've saved so many trees because the paper's all been recycled. I think it's wonderful. Again, I think you have volume here. But then Brussels is no more bigger than Dublin. It's about 1 million people. And I wonder, should we not think of something similar?
But you pay for this service, of course.
Well, we pay. We pay a once a year, about £9 a year. We get a note from the local commune and we pay it straight into the bank to them. And, you know, I suppose if you take every house and every apartment in Brussels and everybody paid £9, it would come to a substantial sum.
Undoubtedly, living in Brussels has many advantages. But what are the disadvantages? What do the Stewarts miss most here?
Well, I miss the everyday contact with people and chats, if you'd like to call it that. And when I go up to the shops, I don't meet anybody I know, and perhaps the odd familiar face, but not anybody I know that I could talk to and discuss things. And so it's really contact with people I miss, day-to-day contact I miss mostly.
Do you ever miss sort of a good yap?
Oh yes, indeed. So, but the Irish Club are very good. The ladies now, about once every 4 to 6 weeks, we have a coffee morning. And it's marvellous. It's really great. We all get together and have, as you say, a real good yak now. And we cry and we whinge. And then we say, after we've got that all off our chest, we say, oh, but it's great here, isn't it? You know, and we have a great time, really, you know. And but as I say, it's just about once every four, except for the coffee shop, of course, on a Sunday morning after after Mass. Well, that's once a week, of course, and we get together then too and have a good chat over things, you know.
Terry, what would you say you miss most about living away from Ireland, living in Brussels?
I think, like Anne, to a certain extent, contact with a lot of people. Although I'm obviously in a slightly different position from Anne. The thing I miss most are the facilities you have in Ireland for getting out into the country fast, for the sea. Funny enough, when I had all these things, I didn't do very much with them, but I tend to miss... I used to walk a little bit in the 12 Pins, and I miss that. I miss that sort of thing. The highest mountain here is about 600 feet, and there's not much you can do there.
But then we have the Ardennes.
We have the Ardennes
here,
which is very pleasant.
Again, it's different, of course, from the 12 Pins. It's more of a forest area.
But I miss the facilities, and there's an ambience about Ireland, too, that I particularly like. It's an emotional thing, I suppose, but I miss that to some extent, and I like to go back fairly often.
Yet you can come home to lunch every day here, and you're closer to your children, I think, than ever you could be at home, because I think in both your former jobs, you were away a lot.
Yeah, that's been a big plus, in a sense that much more, if you like, family-oriented, both for the previous, I suppose, 12 years to coming out here. I was in a job that took me abroad quite a bit and took me out of my base quite a bit. I don't fault it in any way for that. I enjoyed every minute of it, but it had its drawbacks too. So in a sense, I think at the end of the day, you must balance up on the one side, balance up on the other, and you come out, well, maybe equal, I don't know, but in a different way. Here, I would agree with you. I think the fact that we're so close, it's a much more closely knit situation as far as the family is concerned, and the very fact that we're in a foreign country, I think, makes it more so.
Yes, you are inclined to cling together more like a little island in a sea of different language and everything. You do cling a small bit more than you would at home.
Could that create tensions, Anne, would you say?
It probably could, you know. It probably
if you weren't
could,
the right kind of people.
Well, happily and hopefully, we are, you know, it hasn't created any tensions here yet, but perhaps give us time after another few years, it may. But at the moment now, it's we're very lucky that way, because we're so glad to be a family again as such, and have our meals together and evenings and weekends together. It's a big plus, really.
The thing about it is, out here we have the reputation, the people, you know, German colleagues will say laughingly, oh well, you know, the Irish, their sense of timekeeping, and they don't work too hard and all the rest of it. And in fact, of course, that I think that Irish people work very hard. My experience in Ireland from the middle 60s into the middle 70s was that there were a lot of people, very dedicated people, who worked terrible lot harder than you see people here. And I think that it's something we've got to get, that's a little inferiority thing we've got to get over ourselves. I think we enjoy it, I think the men do anyway, but it's something that we should get over, and we can hold our heads up with the rest of Europe. I think we can, we still have our own little quirks, but then we wouldn't be Irish if we didn't have them.
Do you notice anything sort of ridiculous, you know, the line of quirks, about the Belgians, for example, that causes you a lot of amusement?
Amusement? No, their driving causes me heart failure. Yeah. But then, of course, the Irish are not the best drivers in Europe either.
Yeah.
But hard to say.
I think perhaps we don't know enough Belgian people as such to get a definite picture. Because we are inclined to stick to the one language, which is, again, a ghetto mentality, but the communication... I mean, when I came out here, I said, well, now, if I want to speak to Irish people, I'd stay at home. And I was going to, along with a lot of other people, I was going to sort of spread out and meet Belgian people, but that's much easier said than done. Much easier said than done. Because while they're very nice, the people we do know, there's just that little reserve. There's that little reserve.
I think also that people here, I think it's this general continental thing, they have a job to do. if you ask them to do anything beyond that job, there's no way they'll do it.
No.
It's very much their responsibility,
no.
And that's it. And they won't go outside it.
And there we leave our EEC family, Terry and Anne Stewart, and their three children.